This is Leo Yiannakoudis, and the date is March 23, 2004. Today, at 10:30 a.m. at the Shoney's on Steel Creek Road, we will be conducting a second interview with James and Ozina Yancey. James and Ozina Yancey were first interviewed for the Oral History Project under Catherine Flint and the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, in conjunction with the New South Voices Project at the Atkins Library by Kathy Wells. The interview today with James and Ozina Yancey will start off with questions that pertain to the relocation of people from the Brooklyn neighborhood to other neighborhoods. Good morning, James and Ozina Yancey.
Do you remember how people had to go about bidding on their own properties during that particular time?
I can relate more or less to what happened when I was working there in the room in Greenville.
Okay.
When the city bought the property, as I understand it, but it was kind of resale over the top of the people who, if the people wanted to buy the property back, then the city would have planned. With Brooklyn, it was a different situation in the city because I think they had a different plan for it.
Okay.
So in most instances, the people wanted to buy the property back that they sold the city to before.
Okay.
But at the time of Brooklyn, I don't think that the individual property not being bought a property back they wanted to.
Okay.
The city had a plan for it. Like most like Brooklyn. Brooklyn, right in the area, was mostly, as you can see now, mostly government building. And one thing I can remember was the only group that I remember bought that didn't live in Brooklyn, and there's a lot of government entities, the First Baptist Church. Yeah, they bought some property that was urban renewal. And they were in position to pay the price. Now, I don't know if Friendship wanted to purchase a product they had. I don't know if they even tried it. Maybe they couldn't, probably why they moved. I think they probably bought for a little bit of $35,000 profit. And at the time in Brooklyn, I don't think that they would have put in a dent in for buying that product back.
Okay. How are people notified that their land was going? I mean, that their homes were going, or was it by letter, or did people come by to tell them, or did they just find out when the bulldozers showed up?
Well, that was a different process.
Okay.
If people were tenants, they'd have it on.
All right.
And if the owners, of course, they had to deal with those, so they had to negotiate about a property.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they could not reach a price on them, the city could take it by condemning the property.
Or they would condemn the property then.
Yeah, so, they were telling us what the urban renewal did at that time. They had relocation officers who assisted people in the new living arrangements.
Okay.
And they were not supposed to move them into substandard housing. Because consequently, a lot of people had not had utilities over here. Sometimes they couldn't even afford the higher rent. And having worked with urban renewal myself, I saw many people that even had not had utilities in years. It's hard to believe that, but they thought they wouldn't even see that. So and part of my job as a social worker, I think the same thing happened in Brooklyn, that we were to get them prepared to move. Look at health needs, social needs, things like that.
Okay.
There are medical problems, we try to get those treated, but coming them to babies that can provide those needs. So they try to use the humane element to that part. So they like to bring very few people got a chance to move back. Some of those move back now, but where I work, that's almost totally new housing.
What years were you working in that capacity?
60, that was 69.
Okay. And you also worked with the youths in the area that got in a little bit of a tangle, I guess.
Oh, yes. Only thing about it in my job at that time, only time I saw a kid was already in trouble.
Okay.
Two year probation. We processed kids who got into difficulties. What would be criminal acts if they were adults?
Okay.
So, a lot of our clients lived in the area before it was. Before COVID took place and lived there,
yeah.
I spent a lot of time in the old second world school. So I wasn't a social worker, I was a probation officer.
Okay.
Many of my clients, which friends when I was younger than 8 years old, I remember that time.
Wow.
One of them was friends with 4 times before he got 16. That was some of the nature of some of the problems there. There were a lot of people receiving public assistance. Of course, there were a lot of homeowners, too. But I think when the people realized that renewal was taking place, they didn't keep the property up. They didn't spend any money on their campus, but knowing it would be torn down.
So the neighborhood that was Brooklyn, when you were working it, there was some very nice sections to it, some beautiful sections to it, and then there was the alley homes along the outskirts. What you said, they were shotgun homes?
Oh, yes.
Okay. What caused such an extreme difference in the neighborhood? I mean, you're looking at a very comfortable, affluent part of Brooklyn. And then you're looking at a very impoverished one that I think the Charlotte Observer used to like to refer to as slums.
Well, I think one of the things that I, from my standpoint, is that when property got old, it was very difficult to get the owners to repair it because sometimes they saw people as well. If you fix it up, they're going to tear it down. And then if you don't own the property, people don't tend to care for it like they did when they owned it. So I think that's one of the things, too. So they had a common area renewal, so they were going to spend a ton on it, make the minor repairs. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling now that the state of property didn't support the housing code because everything was substandard. That's why I was told the demolition, because the housing was so substandard. And the people who own property, of course, you know, homeowners would keep it up. Now, we keep the property there. But as I recall, everything in Brooklyn at the time was. The whole community was old. There was no new housing at all, as I recall. Houses were close together. But the people had some pride in it.
So we're really looking at the division was really more about absentee landlords, somebody living somewhere else owning the property, and then actual homeowners keeping up what was theirs.
Yes.
And that's the difference. Okay. Would the same be true for businesses then in the area? I mean, most of the businesses, what I understood, were not locally owned. I mean, like the grocery stores, the A&P down there.
No. Well, I didn't have any personal relationship with any business, but I do go to some, like a restaurant, English restaurant, I was a big one. It was open all night, I've been called at that time, and there were theaters. I remember the Lincoln and Savoy Theater, I wouldn't go
okay.
to those. And I do recall a Lincoln there, because they had, at the time, they knew why, she didn't know about it, but I remember used to have a girl that shows. The striptease.
You can talk about that to him after the interview. But I'm.
Yes, these are businesses I know. Two things that I frequent as a student.
Now, some of the businesses were locally owned. I think Bishop Dell owned the service.
Bishop Dell was right on the corner, right across
right.
from. He's right across from Prince Street.
Okay.
Prince Otis called it. He's right across the street.
And he had a service station, I think?
Bishop Dell. Was he wealthy? Well, Bishop Dale considered wealthy at that time. He was a well-known businessman.
Were you one of the ones from the Sunday school that would run over there for soda and snacks during Sunday school?
No, I never went over there. Kid did that, but I didn't.
Okay. I know Buck would sometimes take the children over there, too, and then take them back. He'd help them get out and then get back to Sunday school after they had a soda.
Well, I wasn't involved in the church at this time because I met my wife, 54, I got married at 52.
Congratulations.
I'm trying to think. Between 52 and the time I went to work for Urban Renewal, I don't remember a whole lot about the church, what I did, but I probably... Well, I was gone from 52 to 54 from the service. And so, I'm trying to think. I think Joan was radically married. So there's some gaps in there in my involvement with the church. But we didn't have any children.
The church? The 30-day prayer service. And that was under Reverend Carey?
Yes.
He seemed to have a pretty good plan moving forward once he moved.
Oh, yes. And it was sad, but
didn't have any choice. It was like a condemnation process.
We had some beautiful windows in the old church. And we were concerned about them being destroyed along with the church. But with the plan for the future, those things that would not fit in the old church. We have things that we can talk about, but they are different.
Okay. Do you know what happened to the old stained glass window? Well, that's something I think I need to research then. That's a little bit of history that hopefully has not been lost.
That I didn't know about myself.
Those stained glass had members of the church name on them that we could use them in the church to have to call.
We'll have to look into that one. I learn something new every time.
I didn't know that either, you know, because I wasn't involved in church and shit.
No.
But you're probably going to hear this again, but back at that time, Urban Renewal was not a very popular terminology in that, because people saw it as what they call black removal, because it always saw it affecting black people. But eventually the city changed the policies, going from getting away from total demolition to rehabilitation. I think if the process had continued what is now North Charlotte, I got a feeling the Urban Renewal would have almost.
Yes, see.
Hi, Brother Mingo.
How you doing?
And I think that the same thing could have happened in North Charlotte had it not changed philosophy on the moved away from total demolition to rehabilitation.
Now, the Greenville neighborhood organized, at least the reverends and pastors did. The reverends and pastors organized to oppose demolition. Do you recall that?
I know there were a lot of meetings, but at the time, this matter occurred before I became a part of the process. When I was hired, I'm hiring a social worker, so the process is all in place.
Okay.
So I don't think all they can plan then was to probably make it look as smooth as possible. But those things might have taken place before I came there. Going to the social worker, we butt heads with the relocation officers. Sometimes we didn't like their tactics.
What would your tactics be?
I don't want to call it warfare or not, but these are some of the things that we picked up and talked about the clients, and some of them used some tactics that people we felt that were too inhumane, fighting people to get to the moon. Once they started to move, some tactics we didn't like at all. And so we kind of had caught between the relocation office and social services department.
But you're acting as the advocate for the individual, and they were acting as the arm of the city, pretty much.
Yeah, we couldn't start the process of relocating them. We try to make it smooth as possible, take care of some of the health needs, take care of we didn't have how relocation office was located that. Sometimes we go back behind it and say, they can move straight into Santa Cruz. Because we have people who, we had a range, income range. We had people listing income as little as $25 a month. And so where can you move somebody with no income? And some people always had no income. First you move that resident into a house. That was a dilemma with everything going.
What happened to those people at that end of the spectrum?
More than likely, they were moving to public housing. The only thing was that even public housing, you couldn't have a certain percentage of income. So I think some of them just got lost in the process. They probably couldn't be relocated. They just left on the own with the relatives or just disappeared.
Okay.
But they supposedly kept following up. So even within our own department, social service department, the relocation office, we had little button kids there. And I'm pretty sure the same thing took place in Brooklyn.
I'm going to bring up a question relating more to the younger members of the neighborhood again, and you may have worked with this or not worked with this, but I've heard that when Second Ward in West Charlotte would have a basketball or football game, they would have a fight on the field or the court, and then they would be a rivalry right after the game too, and they would have a rough time with each other.
I heard about the rivalry. That was a very strong rivalry. I didn't get directly involved because I was in college at that time.
Okay.
But I do recall, I remember one time that when we were being initiated in fraternity, we had to go to Second Ward and they were playing in West Charlotte. Because we could see the game, of course, being initiated, we had set our back in case so we could see what was going on. But during that time, I heard a lot about West Charlotte, Second Ward. But what affected most when I was going to John C. Smith during that time, there were some students of the Second Ward that came to John C. Smith that better not get caught in the West Charlotte area. There were some guys on camp that the guys were sitting, you better not come off that camp. So I remember a lot of that rivalry.
Up in state? Oh, okay. But you're telling me it's only got a 47
out of that. And that was our one big thing. We all fall to the open second law in Ohio. Then that was. It was this?
Y'all know.
And have realized see so many people are doing it.
Well, you've been part of the community quite a long time.
Some of the laws and some of the neighbors.
I'm going to ask you a couple questions because this was brought up. Now, you've been married since 1951? 52. Where did you get married?
At home.
At home? Okay.
This or Molly's?
But it's been quite a few years, and I'm hoping for the same for myself, but a little bit of blessing.
I got 51 last year. So, 2 years ago.
So you're allowed to have a little bit of pride in that. So many marriages nowadays, not?
Well, young folks nowadays, they take it differently, half and half. Like Dr. Field said, it actually wasn't a man son for marriage and being a leader. We have been blessed in a lot of ways because we have four children. And we still have four children. And we have lots of grandchildren. And three of them are just two in the and one was born about 19. So
Are there any questions I haven't asked or any things that you would like to be part of the history or anything we haven't covered or we should have covered in all of this?
You're sooner from the perspective of the church in Brooklyn, right? So these other things kind of peripheral type things.
Right. But they're all part of the story. So we were trying to keep things focused for Mr. Holland when we were at Friendship Baptist. And then there were just so many interesting topics that were brought up, we didn't want to miss those. But I really appreciate both of you helping as much as you have with this program. It's been a great blessing to us. I want to thank you both.
Well, I'm glad somebody's taking a look at the history because there's still a few people around who know a little bit about who lived through that period. So, appreciate your daughter.
Turn the recorder off, but...